Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. My name is Carrie Sawyer, and I will be your host for today's episode. We have another amazing guest. This is a person who is a fellow DEI practitioner, among other things, and I actually crossed paths with her when I was attending a seminar that she was facilitating. And it's always fun for me to like kind of be in the metadata of like watching a facilitator, a master do their work. And Kara, my friend Kara, just kind of blew me away with her really consideration with the content and her style and her approachability. So I'm very excited to have her on the podcast today and let you all hear and learn from her insights as well. So Kara has been a social justice advocate through Catholic education for 20 years and has been engaged in anti-racist education as a speaker and consultant since 2006. She's still learning and still growing in her own anti-racism and disengagement with bias, judgment, and any prevention of love. I love how she centers love, and we will be talking a lot about that in our conversation today. Kara currently works for the Sisters of St. Joseph's, whose mission is loving unity. We live and work that we may all be one with God and one with another. It's a mission that she gets behind wholeheartedly. Please join me in welcoming my friend Kara to the Inclusion First Podcast. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. My name is Carrie Sawyer, and I'm your host, and I am here with my friend Kara. We are going to have an incredible conversation today. Kara, how are you? Thank you so much for being on the show.
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, and thank you for believing in my voice. I appreciate you.
I was just saying before we hit record how lovely a voice Kara has, both figuratively and literally. So I'm really excited for this conversation. Kara, how about you start off by just introducing yourself to our listeners today?
Sure. I am currently the executive director for the St. Joseph Educational Ministries. I work in mission and ministry work in higher ed and secondary education. But I would say that I'm the kid of Irish immigrants. I am both culturally Irish and Catholic. And I would say, all of those influences integrated with being someone who was born and raised on the U.S.-Mexico border has heavily influenced me. I would say strongly, grew up in a strong community of Mexican and Filipino friends. I think I'm kind.
You are kind.
I think I at least try to be. an adventurous person. So I would hopefully those are two things that describe me well.
That's awesome, Kara. Thank you for that. So we are going to jump right into the questions today. I would love to start us out by asking you this question. So what does it mean to you to be an anti-racist? And what does that look like in practice in your life or in your experiences navigating this world?
Mm-hmm. I would say it takes a lot of practice, right? So this being a continuous effort in my life. I don't think that anti-racist is something that I will arrive at as much as one just continuously tries to be the best version of what they think an anti-racist person, a loving person, a compassionate person is in the world. So to be anti-racist, though, is, I don't know, there's lots of ways to describe it, but in many ways it comes down to, you know, my efforts to have the most healthy, abundant relationships with others that I can have in this life, because I think that we are inextricably connected and integrated or interdependent upon one another. And so, it doesn't come naturally, but I think, you know, spiritually, I'm really challenged to recognize, you know, namaste, if you will, or God, that, you know, I recognize the God in others, and therefore I'm called to be as best a reflection of a God of love to others in the world. And that's a real effort of anti-racism, because racism exists, right? So, I would say that that's my effort in the world, for sure.
I love that. I love all the words that you used, abundant and, you know, best version and, you know, all of these different things, and really focusing in on the relationships. It's not this kind of abstract idea where you're like, yes, inclusion is important. Like, it's about the connections that we have with people, how we treat people, noticing our own behaviors and beliefs and thoughts when they are maybe out of align with that spirit of abundance and love and connection, and learning how to correct those, right? It's not about being perfect. And you made a huge point about it not being a place that you arrive at. There's no anti-racist stamp. It literally is like moment to moment, what we choose and how we choose to engage with those around us, especially when they are quote unquote different, look different from us.
And I think that the very core or the very root is the word relationships. You know, I was formed by these Catholic Sisters of St. Joseph, right? And they are very much grounded in relationships. I know that the way in which I see the world has been deeply shaped by that. And I bring it up because, you know, relationships are the one way in which we grow most deeply. They're the way in which I think we are the most open, because I'm certainly willing to hear things from people from whom I know have a deep caring about me differently than I am open to someone with whom I don't have a relationship with, right?
Sure.
And so I think in fostering relationships, we not only broaden our own scope of growth, but we therefore, I think, open up someone else's breadth of vision and image of how they see the world. So I think relationships, you know, tapping into that is so crucial, that we not forget one another in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm cannot remember the person who said this, but the idea that racism doesn't hold up when in close proximity with other people, and the relationships that then come out of that.
That's right. But it also, I think, really taps into, do I hold those racist frameworks outside of that relationship? Relationship holds us more accountable to be honest.
Yeah.
Like if I say that I love you as you are, right? And in that, it means like a whole person. And so I have to be really called into the depths of, am I the same Kara that I am in front of Carrie as I am in front of every other person in life or in my day to day? And I think that that's really, really, that's like holy accountability in my opinion.
Yeah. And that is a discrepancy and a disconnect for a lot of people.
Yeah, and even talk.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly. And, you know, this, it also kind of fuels this idea that if you do have a person of color, we'll say, for example, that is close to you, that therefore you cannot be racist. I can't be racist because my best friend is Black. My, you know, coworker is Black. My partner, my children, you know, but those relationships do not give you a get out of racism free card because you are in the same waters, the same polluted air that we're all breathing. Okay. And regardless of who you have in your circle, we're still ingesting that those racist ideals and belief systems, and it's this constant battle against them. And when you are in close proximity to a person of color, you actually have more opportunities to hurt in deeper ways than if you only have surface relationships. And so your responsibility is even greater to understand who you are and how you're navigating the topics of race and racism as well.
It's funny that you say, you know, the notion of, well, I have Black friends, therefore I'm not racist.
Right.
That it gives you, I think you said, it gives you a get out of jail free card. Why are people so terrified that, on the contrary, to have those relationships can be not a get out of jail free card, because it's a lifelong journey, right? Anti-racism, but rather a permission, a companionship, an authenticity to experience life and like real friendship and relationship to others in just a more profound and I think freeing way. I can't have an authentic friendship with someone if I am not consistently an authentic person. So if we are all walking each other home here, then that just allows, I think, a greater freedom versus I don't need to get out of anything. I need to, it's reminding me, actually, I just gave this retreat talk and the theme was reaching into the chaos.
Ooh.
And I think it's the same kind of notion that, like, you know, if we reach into the chaos, reaching into the depths of the suffering of others, reaching into the struggles that others go through, et cetera, I'm probably going to be surrounded by the kinds of people who I most admire because they reach in too, right? So it's a real companionship, I think, in this journey towards like a oneness, a real sense of what love looks like in the world.
Mm-hmm. I love framing that as it's an opportunity to really dig in and to lean in versus, you know, getting out of jail free and being able to like distance yourself from these real parts of full authentic relationships, to use your words. If you have an authentic friendship with someone and you're afraid to talk about something, why? That's on your side more likely than not. But in those spaces, more grace is given. And I'm not telling everyone to run out and ask their minority friends all the questions. But in those circumstances where it comes up, there's more grace that is given. And you can connect in a different way. And there's just an opportunity there that's not there with strangers, or really that shouldn't be. You know, the relationship that you have totally dictates what kinds of things you talk about and to what level, right? And what's appropriate and what's not. And like asking a coworker questions, a minority coworker in the middle of the workday, No, not a good look. Asking a friend after you were talking about a movie, this is contextually related, or this is happening out in the, you know, in the atmosphere and the social consciousness. Hey, I was wondering, would you be open to talking to me about these things? You have a greater permission to really be curious.
Yes.
But then also even just observing the life experiences of others and just soaking in the stories that they share and taking them as their own, you know, complex person with all these different facets that move back and forth depending upon what circumstance we're in, right?
It even invites you into joy and humor. Right. Mm-hmm. So I can, to be frank and transparent, I can have certain conversations with friends of mine where we can, you know, joke back and forth, if you will, on certain matters that I would not otherwise have in my work as an educator or facilitator on conversations around white privilege.
Right? Sure.
So relationship and friendship, though, has even educated me through humor and joy, as well as, you know, the invitation into the realness of what friends and loved ones experience in the world. I'm like, in my head, I'm identifying.
You have these stories.
I have these stories. Now I'm thinking of my...
I can see that on your face.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like my dear, she calls me sister friend, my dear Dr. Juliana Mosley, who taught me so much about cultural humility. And we joke, you know, back and forth about like ebony and ivory presentations that we have given, where she can say things that I can't say, and I can say things that she doesn't necessarily feel that she can say. And in joint education, you know, we can provide differently. Or I'm thinking about like my friend Chris Nive, whom we can have conversations about building community relationships and how important relationships are to community development work. Or being in spaces and places too where my friends, who may also be colleagues, but my friends can be who they are, can speak in whatever way they're most comfortable being, if that is to be their most Mexican self, their most Filipino self, their most Black self, whatever that is, that they're comfortable being who they are with me. Mm-hmm. Not that there is a feeling to be any other way because I happen to be white, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the greatest privileges of my life, that others can be fully who they are with me in relationship in their life.
I love that. That's beautiful. So, Kara, I would love to hear, like, where did your anti-racism journey start? How would you, and you can really dig in anywhere that like sparks for you.
Became apparent to me. I was in fifth grade. I was playing Foursquare. And
oh my gosh, Foursquare. Wow.
And one of the girls in my class was talking about the white girls in class. And I said, "But I'm white." And she said, "But you're different." And that was the first time that I had something was evoked within, right? Like I felt something that I don't know that I had felt before. And then I think that I had really wonderful educators. You know, I know a lot of your podcast is on activism and saying like, are you an activist? And I'm really proud to say I work in education. And for me, and that is a revolutionary and an activist act in and of itself. We show up in that way, and to be able to educate on social justice matters. So I had really great educators, But I would suggest that was in my early professional days. I was working at the University of San Diego in ministry. And I would say that what my education gave me was not an expertise by any means, but rather it helped to equip me with being comfortable enough to be uncomfortable. And so in those early professional days, I sort of just landed in this place of like, do you mind speaking to the white experience? And I didn't have a real issue with that. That was okay with me. Maybe that comes from my own, you know, my own upbringing of like, you know, immigrant parents, first generation in this country. What does all that mean? Everything that informs someone's experience. I don't have a real great answer to your question, except to know that I've always been aware of the difference. And I think that I grew okay enough to say if my effort is to be the best version of myself in the world, then I need to figure out how to, what does that mean for everyone in the world, that they have the kind of access to their own vision of what that means for themselves. And if people are saying, I don't have access to that, I can't envision that, I don't know if that's possible. Imagine saying, I don't know if it's possible, when we can like imagine so much. The imagination doesn't exist for anything other than to present to us what is possible, because we can imagine it. Then I just think it's a natural inclination to want that for people. We're real good at the social constructs of divisions, but we're not very good at tapping into the instinct to love and to acknowledge. You know, anyone who's ever been in relationship to someone else knows that love is not easy. Love's hard work. Just willing to put in the hard work, because that's who I want to be in the world. And I suppose that's where my anti-racism comes from. But I'll show up, you know, I've been showing up for years at this point. And I'll keep showing up in community, in places that feel different to me. Where I might think, okay, I'm going to be uncomfortable. Well, I'm going to have to find enough comfort to show up to be uncomfortable.
One of the things that sparked while you were sharing that about yourself is what you said about being comfortable or being aware even enough to share your own experience of whiteness and being able to lean into that question for other people. And I think that's super fascinating. And I'm super interested in if that is something that other white people also are comfortable doing. I mean, yes, you're not a monolith in the way that no one else is either, but because whiteness is so invisible and that privilege is so invisible. If I asked, you know, one of my friends who isn't working in this space, you know, what's your experience of whiteness? It would make them very uncomfortable, I would expect. And I don't know that they would know how to answer it, like how to make those divisions in their mind. Or, and I'm just riffing right now because I'm, you know, I don't know the experience, but, or it would feel like icky or politically incorrect to like talk about what essentially is the privilege of being white and what some of those things might be. I wouldn't want to call out, well, my experience of whiteness in a general setting, they can go anywhere with that. In a, you know, what is your experience of whiteness as it comes to starting a business, going to college, like, you know, walking through a nice neighborhood, whatever those things are, would people have the awareness to be like, well, my experience is this, but that also communicates the experience of difference and the knowledge and the mm-hmm. noticing that mm-hmm. other people are having different experiences mm-hmm. and not even necessarily judging those experiences, but just being aware that they exist. And so from what I've seen, it looks like someone else is having this experience, but this is the experience that I'm having. And as a minority and a person of color, like we're like kind of trained from as young as we can start to, you know, understand difference, whether it's because our parents talk to us about it or because we have a traumatic experience that brings out that difference starkly to our awareness. We're kind of trained to notice the differences and to right. see the experiences that are happening. And it's just a natural human thing to notice when someone is having a different experience than you. Someone is being treated more nicely than you. Someone is being given whatever, you know, I know we all have, you know, childhood stories and teenage stories and grown-up stories. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I was at my best friend's house. I think we were all home from college for the holidays. Hung out there all the time, all through high school. Loved his family. They loved me. We were there with friends and we were getting ready to go somewhere else. We had bundled up Indiana wintertime because it's the holidays. Bundled up and we're about to go outside. And as we're going outside, one of my friend's parents, one of their friends is coming in. It's a couple. And the wife smiles at people, looks at me, the only brown girl in the group, and her face literally looked like she saw a bug she needed to step on. I was just like, and I faltered in my steps and in my smile that I was giving to these people as we were leaving because, you know, I'm just a teenager or young college student out to have a night of merriment and mischief. And this woman just blasted me with her racism. My friends were white. His family were white. I was in a predominantly white neighborhood. I grew up down the street in this predominantly white neighborhood. And I remember her looking at me like I was a bug. That's the best way to describe it. It just like punches you in the chest. She didn't know me. She'd never seen me before. She didn't smile. She didn't say hi. It was just, you're a bug. What are you doing here in that moment? Right. And she didn't treat anyone else like that. I mean, obviously at that time I was, you know, in my late teens, early 20s, and those experiences were something that I had learned. But the first time that happens to you, you don't even understand it because it's happened so young. Right. And so we are through experiences and trial by fire, given these incredibly painful learning experiences of the difference and how people navigate differently and how people are treated differently, even if that moment didn't impact me in the sense of, oh, I didn't lose a job or not get a job or, you know, it was still something that I remember vividly to this day because it was the opposite of love. It was harsh and unwelcoming and unwanted.
That's right. Yeah, you didn't lose a job, but you stumbled. And how dare any of us make another feel like they're stumbling, right? That
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going to remember when people do that. I don't know if I've said this to you before at times in conversations, but I do very much wholeheartedly feel that the experience of being white and the education of white people with regard to how white privilege acts as a blindness to the beauty of actual diversity is something that more white people have to become more involved with. And, you know, there's a few white voices out there, but there needs to be a lot more. You know, for example, you know, I feel like professionals who work in the field of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging should very much feel that they have peers or contemporaries in their work who are white that can engage in conversation, right? So mm-hmm. what I'm suggesting is that while I am not a professional in the field, I am definitely, I feel a peer or a contemporary willing to be engaged in the field to the degree of standing up in front of folks and engaging in their experience, you know, other white people engaging in the experience. Because what do I offer? You know, the reality is I help take defenses down. Because as a fellow white person, I suggest to other white people, let's do this together. Things are easier when you're doing it together. So let's do this together. And if I can help break some of that down and be in solidarity and in that way, right, engaging people in vulnerability, then I'm going to reach out and be in relationship with my friends, peers, colleagues, et cetera, people of color or other diverse backgrounds. And that's going to help bring those other folks into relationship. I can't help them away from relationship, but that's where it's at, right?
It's the bridge, right? The
bridge that I really do think more people in majority populations, so whatever the matter is at hand, have to get more involved. People care. I think we've just lost sight of, like, it is okay to screw up, you know, it is okay to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. It is okay. It's also up to me to be a part of, how is this person going to hear that they did make a mistake? And how can I communicate to them in a way that they're going to hear? And I think solidarity is huge in some of that. You know, if I say I'm in solidarity with anti-racist movements, it means I got to be, you know, be willing to engage in breaking down the barriers in the white community to help create more relationships, I guess, is broadening that scope, right, of interdependence in the world. But yeah, I think the whiteness is so many white people don't even know that they're, you know, like that.
Yeah, it's so invisible, you know. They're just bopping along. They don't have a race.
They don't have, you know, I mean, that's why colorblind, if you will, became
a thing.
Such a thing. But at the end of the day, like, you know, I guess if we can, like, shift the lens a little bit, you know, for example, you know, we say things now are political in a manner of which that word infers a negative, or it's bad. But when did politics become that which is not for the good of the people?
That was deep.
Right? Like,
yeah.
How did that happen? I mean, we kind of know how that happened.
Yeah, but you know.
But is that not the profession? Is that not the field, right, of being a politician, of being political, playing a role, is for the good of the people? And I feel like if we can start having conversations that shift the tone or the lens of some of that, then we invite people into a different kind or a different tone of conversation. That isn't necessarily for people of color to feel the need to engage in. And I say that because I recognize that there is a lot of frustration, anger, et cetera. I'm saying this on behalf of, the question was about my own whiteness. So I'm only speaking from that experience, is what I'm trying to say, that, like, for the good of the people and to be to do my duty as a citizen, it's for the good of the people. And this is part of that activist nature in that work. I went a little all over the place. Sorry, Carrie.
No, that was great. I love that we talked about bridges. And I also loved about how you situated yourself as a bridge, but not even just a bridge between initially, like, okay, how do we bring together what feels like disparate needs and wants and experiences between, you know, majority populations and minority populations, but then also as a bridge within your own majority population to the topic at all. And that can happen in majority spaces, right? It doesn't need to happen in mixed spaces. It can, you're situating yourself as a bridge. And we talk about modeling all the time at the Inclusion First Institute and this idea that people are watching you mm-hmm. and they're listening to you, even when you don't know that that's happening. Mm-hmm. And so whether you set out to have an intentional conversation about racism or connecting with people who are different, or it's totally accidental or through some other way, there are people who are absorbing what you're doing and learning, right or wrong, right. Different ways to navigate based on what you're doing and what you're saying. And I think it's just really powerful for our white allies to think about, it's not just about the solidarity with other populations. It's about creating solidarity within the majority populations within mm-hmm. white America, and being a person who the message can come in such a way that it can be heard. And we see the same thing in gender, right? Like, there are some messages that have to come from a man for another man to hear it. A woman can say it 25,000 times and that man will never hear it. But the second a man says it, yeah. like, oh yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's the same with really all of our intersections, if we're going to be honest, but definitely the same with race. And so there's this huge opportunity to be a bridge to the topic, period, the end,
yeah.
within the white population.
Well, because I think so much of it, you know, is fear based mm-hmm. in a lot of ways.
Sure.
Fear of not only that which is,
we've got a puppy on the podcast. On the podcast. It's okay.
But you know, people's fear of that which they don't know. People's fear of what they may think they have to let go of, you know, like, sure. if I have this privilege, am I being called to let go, or what does all that look like, right? The fear of that. And I suppose that if someone comes along when I'm afraid and says, give me your hand and let me hold it as I join you in that fear, I'm less afraid. And I think that that's what it represents. And don't get me wrong, sometimes it means like some very real conversation. I don't mean to suggest that this is like a, let me put my arm around other people who, you know, are not exercising love. I mean, sometimes it really requires some very real conversations. And that's okay too, because sometimes that's how you get at love, right?
Sure. How you unpack it and how you open up those connections to it. This reminds me of a seminar that I participated in. I mentioned it a while ago on the podcast, but Race Stories by Johanna Walker. She's over in Denver, Colorado, and she basically assembled a group of a very small group, like 10 people or less of mixed races together to come and tell their stories about race to each other. And then you ended up performing it. It was during the pandemic, so we did it over Zoom at the time, but she does it in person otherwise. But white people, black people, Asian people, Latino people, Indian people telling their stories about race to each other. And it was super interesting because there were times where it was like a 3-hour class once a week. And there were times where we would break out into same race groups. And there were times where we break out into mixed groups. And it was super fascinating because I always wonder, like, what are the white people talking about right now? Because they don't have conversations like this typically. And hearing for the first time, like, white stories told through like the lens of whiteness, the real white experience, not the like filtered one, not the PC one, but like, this happened to me and this is what I actually felt and thought about it, was so mind-opening, because that's something we never hear, stories of whiteness in a way where you're actually, the person
is being like just open and vulnerable and honest.
Yeah.
And they created a really beautiful environment, her and her colleague Daryl, in making the space where, you know, we could hear white stories alongside Black stories. And the thing is, like, in like, it sounds like, oh, we always hear white stories. Well, we hear a certain white narrative. And yes, we're centered in whiteness, but hearing a white story about race in a vulnerable way versus a like whitewashed, to use a maybe not great metaphor, was a totally different thing, because I felt that for the first time I was inside their head, not the like, oh, I didn't think that, I'm not racist. It was like, yeah, I was afraid. Yeah, I saw my parent do XYZ. Yeah, I didn't understand why. We couldn't, like, there was just, it was so honest, and we just don't have those conversations because we try to share our experience. I try to share my experience as a Black woman, and it may or may not be received, and there's this constant battle, but I don't get to hear stories of whiteness in that way, you know, where they intersect with race and what you were really thinking and feeling. And it was super powerful and honest, and that's what really resonated. It was honest. That's where you build from, that honest place. We're so afraid to go there. We don't know how, we don't have the skills, sure, but it was really a magical moment and experience to be in that honest moment of acknowledging race and not trying to make it pretty or politically correct, and then building a discussion on that.
It's funny because I think that white people do have a lot of discussion on race. It's just oftentimes the discussion is not from the perspective of anti-racism.
Sure.
So now what we're talking about, right, is a contrast to what we know the narrative to be. Mm-hmm. When you bring this up, I'm thinking about the amount of times where I, you know, have to navigate conversations with people that I care about, where I am not, where we're not sharing in a perspective, or when there is a dismissive nature to the conversation. Mm-hmm. Well, just because I said that doesn't mean, right? And I'm saying, well,
sure.
You know, anyone who's familiar with language knows it does heavy that is, right? So there is a lot of negotiating. There's a fair amount of negotiating for me in my life pretty consistently about how me being white plays an active role in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about negotiations. How will this white person, you know, hear me? This is someone I love. How do I love them well while calling this out, right? There's a lot of that negotiating that goes on because you want the best outcome.
Right.
You know, I have the privilege to negotiate in a way that may have a most loving outcome. That too is a privilege of being white in this conversation with white people.
Absolutely. Kara, this has been amazing. I have one last question for you before we wrap up. And I would love to know, so what would you say is like your biggest learning when it comes to walking this anti-racist path, like doing this work, navigating these spaces? What's like one of the top learnings that you've taken away from it?
I mean, they're all loaded.
I know. I'm like, last question. Here's a doozy for you.
Do you love your puppy? Yes, I love my dog. I thought that was cool. What is my biggest learning? I'm not sure if this is going to get at what you're asking, but I happen to know that if my life has been as enriched by the amount of diversity of people in it, and that I have intentionally enriched my life in that way. I've been intentional about relationships, etc. Then I think the lesson is our world is really lacking if it is not as, like, we'll get back to that word, abundant. If it's not that abundant in relationship with one another, then we have a long way to go to be the best version of the world that we can be, the best version of our country, the best version of my own church, the best version, you know, it is everywhere. And I know that we are lacking in who we can be if we're one, let's just say. If we're one, we're lacking in who we're capable of being. Because not everyone is, you know, in the circle equally, in having a voice equally, in sharing equally. Mm-hmm. And, we're missing out. And that's, be nice if we got a little bit closer in my lifetime. I'll take it as a party. Yeah. I want to be at.
Yeah. The richness that is there in our differences, in the diversity. And the thing is, like, yes, we are different, but we also have lots of things that are the same. And so in our fear to, like, not engage with the difference, we miss out on those things that we have and that we share as well. And so you get neither the beauty nor the sameness and the comfort that comes from knowing that someone else is going through what I'm going through, maybe in a different way, maybe in a different part of the world, maybe in a different time, but they share these things with me as well. And that is the beauty of being human. There are so many connections in the journey of being on this human experience. And then there are so many differences that just enrich everything and everyone, and being able to harness those and gather them up and access them. That's the beauty. That's the potential.
It's not hilarious in a funny way, but it's fascinating, I should say, that we are so the same. We all arrive as humans with a human experience, right, of being on this planet. And yet what we have, what we've done to one another is, it's fascinating to me. But I don't know, listen, every party that I go to where there is greater diversity, it's a much better time. Because, you know, things taste better, things sound better, things look amazing. And I mean that sort of metaphorically, right? That we just bring more to the table. So,
yeah, we're curious beings, and those environments that inspire and trigger our curiosity create richness and more ideas. You know, we talked about this idea of what's possible.
What's possible.
What's possible becomes greater in our diversity. And in our sameness too. Yeah. So,
working for the Sisters of St. Joseph, they always say, together we are more. I love that.
That's beautiful. On that note, Kara, thank you so much. You were a fantastic guest. I loved every second of talking with you. If people want to know more about the work that you're doing, follow you in any way, is there any place on that people can connect with you or learn more about the work that you're doing?
I mean, I'm in, like, transition, right? But folks are always welcome to reach out at solidarityawareness@gmail.com. Sorry, so many email addresses. Yeah, solidarityawareness@gmail.com. I'm hoping that more easily accessible spaces are coming soon. So
lovely.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for what you do. In this way of building relationships and being a bridge builder yourself, you're truly, you're a gift. So
Thank you, Kara. Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.